Good morning. We're going to open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Today is February 17th. I point that out because today is the last day for introduction of bills which are not priority bills. So we are going to have, I would assume, unless the committee has a bill that we want to move forward or a measure to move forward, this will be our last day for possible measure introduction. I'll open a work session for that purpose. And Cheyenne, if you could just go through the list.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for introduction today, LC-117-1 dated February 16th, LC-1363 dated February 2nd, LC-1571 dated October 14th, 2010, LC-2324 dated November 30th, 2010, LC-2339 dated December 7th, 2010, LC-2343 dated October 26th, 2010, LC-2519 dated January 28th, LC-3199 dated January 19th, LC-3263-1 dated February 9th, LC-3314 dated January 27th, and LC-3383 dated January 20th.
All right, thank you. And I'd like to make a motion on the introduction of those measures.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to try to do it in one breath.
That's fine. Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move LC 117-1 dated 2-16-11, LC 1363 dated 2-2-11, LC 1571 dated 10-14-10, LC 2324 dated 11-30-10, LC 2339 dated 12-7-10, LC 2343 dated 10-26-10, LC 2345 dated 10-19-10, LC 2519 dated 1-28-11, LC 3199 dated 1-19-11, LC 3263-1 dated 2-9-11, and LC 3833 dated 1-20-11 be introduced as committee bills.
So, Senator Cruz has moved for the introduction of LC 117-1, LC 1363, LC 1571, LC 2324, LC 2339, LC 2343, LC 2345, LC 2519, LC 3199, LC 3263-1, LC 3314, and LC 3833. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And again, for the record, these measures are being introduced as a courtesy of allowing measures to come into the process to be considered. There's no guarantee that the measures we've just introduced will be bills that will be before this committee, and or whether any of us would actually support them if they are in front of our committee or on the floor for a subsequent vote as they are currently written. So with that, we have, I'm going to do a little bit different procedure today. Craig Prince is here. He has a meeting with the governor. That starts at 9, and so I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on the possible measures for introduction, open a work session on Senate Bill 62, and Council, if you can give us a review on 62.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 62 is the Criminal Justice Commission's adoption of administrative rules and amendment of administrative rules as required pursuant to ORS 137667. It was held a public hearing on February the 3rd.
All right. Chair would entertain a motion on Senate Bill 62.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 62 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 62 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objections? So ordered. And let's see, you need a carrier on this one. Senator Valamici, you want to do this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. and we'll close that public, that work session, Senate Bill 62. And I think at this point, I'd like to go ahead and start our public hearing, since we do have people here that want to testify. So we're going to go back to the top of the agenda for public hearings. We'll start with Senate Bills 379, and I'll open that public hearing at this time.
Mr. Chair,
members of the committee, Senate Bill 379 allows active members of the Oregon State Bar to file statements of candidacy for positions on the State Bar's Board of Governors and House of Delegates, declares an emergency effective on passage. It comes from the Board of Governors section of the Oregon State Bar. Currently, candidates for their Board of Governors and House of Delegates positions are required to submit nominating petitions signed by 10 other members, and Senate Bill 379 would replace that requirement.
All right. I have only one individual scheduled or signed up to testify, Sylvia Stevens. And while she's coming up, is anyone else going to want to testify on Senate Bill 379?
Good morning, Chair Kozanski, members of the committee. I'm here. I'm Sylvia Stevens. I'm the executive director of the Oregon State Bar, and I'm here to, I guess, answer any questions you might have about this bill, because committee counsel has pretty much told you what it does. The current procedure that's been in place for a long time requires that every candidate for the Board of Governors file a petition signed by 10 active members of the bar, and it seems to be a requirement that doesn't really add much value to the process, and it's a lot easier to just have people submit their own petition and then either be elected or not. So that's what we're trying to do, is simplify that, make it easier for our members.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Any, no questions? Thank you very much. And I'm not sure, are you going to be up for the next one? Why don't you just keep your seat then? We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 379 and open that public hearing on Senate Bill 380.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 380 automatically suspends a person's membership in the Oregon State Bar for failure to file annual certification or other disclosures regarding lawyer trust accounts, declares an emergency effective on passage. Oregon lawyers must hold client funds in interest-bearing lawyer trust accounts. We call them IOLTAs. They must also certify annually pursuant to Oregon Rules of Professional Conduct 1.15-2 sub M that they are in compliance with the rules that govern such accounts. Senate Bill 380 makes noncompliance with the annual certification requirement subject to an automatic administrative suspension rather than disciplinary action, and comes from the Board of Governors section on the Oregon State Bar.
The committee. I'm Sylvia Stevens, Executive Director of the Oregon State Bar. As was just explained, this bill would create a new provision in the Bar Act, creating administrative suspensions for lawyers who fail to certify their compliance with the trust account regulations of the bar. By way of background, lawyers have always been required to hold client funds in a trust account separate from their own money. And for many years, we've also had a requirement that funds that can't earn, they're small enough or not held for such a period of time that they can earn any interest for the client, those go into what's called an IOLTA account, which stands for Interest on Lawyer Trust Accounts. And the interest on those accounts is paid over to the Law Foundation, where it's granted out to low-income legal service providers. In 2005, and that was all done by Supreme Court order, which was kind of a standalone order. In 2005, we decided to try to bring those provisions into the rules of professional conduct so that lawyers would have a place to look for them and they would understand them a little better. And at the same time, we adopted a certification requirement so that lawyers would be required to tell us whether they're in compliance and where they have their trust account. One sort of unforeseen consequence of that was that a failure to file this annual certification then put them into the disciplinary system to have the matter resolved, and it seems to be kind of overkill for what is really an administrative piece of information that we want. So this would take this, we'll have to amend the rule of professional conduct, but the court's prepared to do that if this bill passes. This would make this an administrative, just like not paying your bar dues or not filing your continuing education compliance report, would be an administrative suspension until they file the report and then they get reinstated.
Questions? I do have one question, just for clarification. I want this on the record more. So if someone is out of compliance, and it sounds like it would be handled similarly if you fail to pay your bar dues, is there a notice that actually goes to the attorney saying you have failed or we have not received your, in this case, compliance report, and therefore you are suspended, and then have a period for them to actually respond before the suspension actually goes into effect? Or does it automatically go into effect based on the notice going out?
Chair Przanski, there is a notice. Currently, we send out lots and lots of notices. The bill provides for a 60-day notice period, so we would give them notice, probably give them more than one notice during that period of time and remind them that they have to do this.
Yeah, I just want to put some stuff on the record so people understand it's not automatically they're going to not be practicing law, but they have an opportunity to respond and say, yes, I did send something in, sorry you didn't get it, here's my copy of what I sent.
Right. We also include all of this with their dues payment announcement notice, and people are doing most of that online now, or many people are, and so when you pay your dues, it also flags have you filed your compliance certificate. So
some of the old guard still writes out the check, and so I do send in the form and all that, but sometimes you never know if it actually gets to the receiver.
I'm
all right, any other questions or comments? All right, we'll close that public hearing on Senate Bill 380, and we're going to open the last public hearing on Senate Bill 381. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 381 authorizes State Professional Responsibility Board to name members of Oregon State Bar to investigate attorney conduct and eliminates the use of local professional responsibility committees for that purpose. The Oregon State Bar currently relies on groups of volunteers organized into local professional responsibility committees to assist with investigating complaints against attorneys. Senate Bill 381 would replace the committee structure and instead allow as-needed designation of individual members.
Good morning, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. I'm Sylvia Stevens, Executive Director of the Oregon State Bar. The change that we're making here really is to modernize, if that's the right word, a part of the Bar Act that is a relic of an older time when the disciplinary process was almost entirely handled by volunteers. Over the years, as many programs, we have professionalized that process. The local professional responsibility committees, which we call LPRCs, were groups of volunteers who really handled a lot of the preliminary investigation of cases and developed them for presentation to the State Professional Responsibility Board, which acts as a kind of a grand jury and makes actual charging decisions in cases. They were certainly, you know, good work by well-intentioned volunteers, but the process became very slow because they would meet as committees. A case would be assigned. It would be given to someone on the committee. That person would do their work, bring it back to the committee, which would then talk about the case and make findings and recommendations by committee, which would then go back to the bar. So it has slowed the process down. So a few years ago, what we started doing actually was assigning cases directly from the Professional Responsibility Board or Disciplinary Counsel's office to an individual member of an LPRC, and they act as a direct investigator and report back to the bar. So what we're trying to do here is reconcile the statutory language with what we're actually doing, and fixing it so that these groups of people don't act as a committee any longer. They will be really a panel of volunteer investigators.
Questions? All right. Sylvia, thank you very much. I did not ask in the last bill, so I'm definitely going to ask here, was there anyone else who'd like to testify on 381, the bill before us? Not seeing anyone else coming forward, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 381, and I'll ask the question regarding Senate Bill 380. Since I didn't ask it before, was there anyone here who wanted to give testimony on that bill? All right. With that, that closes our public hearings. And now we're going to move into the work session. We've already taken action on Senate Bill 62, so I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 64. Cheyenne?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 64, a work session today was heard on February 3rd. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. As a reminder, it's it limits the applicability of the Uniform Act on Blood Tests to determine paternity in criminal matters to criminal non-support cases only, and it applies retroactively. The committee discussed the practical effect of a strict reading of the act and the cost and time savings for testing.
All right, and just for the clarification, I think you gave the date of the public hearing. Okay.
February the 3rd.
All right. Thank you. Chair will take a motion on Senate Bill 64.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 64 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 64 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Close the work session on Senate Bill 64.
Mr. Chair, you need a carrier for that?
And we will take a carrier for that.
I will volunteer.
And Senator Dingfelder jumps off there. You had your chance, so we'll see you on the next couple here. All right. And
I had to carry the Scrivener's bill, so I got a little bit of a problem
from
the other one.
We'll see. All right, open up a work session on Senate Bill 65. Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 65, also heard on February the 3rd, allows the percent by weight of alcohol in blood to be based on grams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood or grams of alcohol per 210 milliliters of breath. This is the conversion bill. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no subsequent referral. At the hearing on the 3rd, Senator Dingfelder requested a written response from Oregon State Police to written materials that were authored by Ken Manili and provided by Ms. Meyer, who appeared in opposition to the bill on behalf of the Oregon Defense Lawyers Association. The State Police provided those materials, and they were sent around to everybody on the 9th, and they're part of the meeting materials today. And on the 14th, Ms. Meyer followed up with a response from Mr. Manili, which is also part of meeting materials.
Yeah, my understanding, looking at that material, the stuff that we got from the state police was about 66 pages in length with the supporting documentation plus the response. And then Mr. McNally had a one-pager that was in response to, I guess, part of that report. So, discussion. Senator Wissett.
Actually, I have a question of staff. Section 1-2, not less than 0.8% of blood constitutes the under the influence. And in 4, sub 4, it says the percent is based on the blood or the breath, which seems to be a little contradictory.
Does the arrested person have the right to
obtain a blood alcohol test? And under the proposed law, will the result of the blood test be the prevailing test of record? So, I mean,
Mr. Chair, Senator Wissett, the prevailing record if they had both, if they were in competition with each other?
If the person is arrested, takes the breathalyzer test, fails the breathalyzer test, opts to pay for a blood test, will the blood test be the test of record?
It would be subject to, Mr. Chair, Senator Wissett, subject to the same rules of evidence with regard to its reliability and credibility as any other.
Yeah, they both would be, I would assume, brought before the jury or the judge who was hearing the case. The way, if you look at the back of the implied consent where the individual is asked to take or to submit to a breath test, it walks through that you have these obligations, and then if you choose to, you can actually, at your own expense, have a blood test done. Both of those would be evidence that would be considered by the court. The question would be if the person went to get a blood test, did they go through the procedure? In other words, going to a hospital that is has people that are licensed to actually perform that test, and the test is performed appropriately, say everything comes forward, then it would be put before the jury as here's the blood test that was taken at whatever time in relation to when they were stopped, and also the breath test if it came in through the procedure and process, then the jury would decide between those two. I would say neither of them would have priority or preference over the other. They would just be two pieces of evidence that needs to be weighed by the jury or the judge as a trier of fact.
And currently, you can have a blood test or a mandatory breath test. Does either one of those tests rule in court now? I mean, is there a change in what I'm getting at here? Currently, you're required to take a breath test, or you are assumed to be guilty. If you have a breath test and a blood test in the current law, does the blood test prevail, or is it still the same thing to be weighed by the jury?
Still the same thing to be weighed by the jury. And just for clarification, you're not presumed to be guilty if you refuse to take the breath test. What happens is that it can be used against you in the sense that they can submit to the jury that a person failed to take the test when they were asked to do so. And then the jury can consider that for whatever weight it would give.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the concern seems to be, I just have a question about whether something could be raised. The concern seems to be that the conversion ratio is an issue. So say, for example, Senate Bill 65 was in effect and someone is charged, could they then come in and argue that the conversion ratio is incorrect?
My understanding is this is the legislature would be making that decision as a matter of policy. It would be a matter of law that conversion rate would be acceptable, that it would be stated, the conversion is stated in the language of the Senate bill.
Yeah, and I would follow up saying I agree with that analysis, that it would be assumed, just like we do with the point 08, that if the jury determines that the test was appropriately or properly administered, they could assume or presume that the person was under the influence of intoxicants based on the 0.08 or greater, I would believe that it would be the same on the ratio, that the state would be setting this is the standard and this is the ratio that the state believes is would show that a person is in fact under the influence of intoxicants. Now, whether or not a court would allow an individual through counsel or their own defense to raise the issue, I think it would come down to whether it would be relevant based on what the state law is. And I don't know whether a court would find that to be relevant to bring before the jury for argument. If it was permissible for that argument to be, or evidence to be brought forward and an argument to be made, I would assume whoever was prosecuting the case would take the position that the state has deemed that ratio to be one that the jury can rely on as showing that a person was under the influence of intoxicants. Now, since I've now put that on the record, I'm going to allow those who are in the room on either side of this issue, they disagree with what counsel has said or what the chair believes is how this would be handled, I will be more than glad to have you come forward to put that on the record.
Mr. Chair,
while they do that, yeah, Senator Cruz.
I mean, right now, I mean, we're just scientifically throwing a dart at a dartboard. I mean, you know, if you could argue that, you could currently argue that 0.8 isn't the right standard as well.
Right.
So.
Gail, if you'd like to come on up. And your response will be limited to what is before us, not advocating any other positions.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Poznanski, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I just want to articulate my read of what the bill would do. I do believe it would foreclose any challenge by the defense that the conversion ratio would be inexact or inapplicable to any one given defendant. I think that what is being asked of the committee and the legislature in this bill is to simply set a standard that is, therefore, it forecloses further debate. That's my read.
Any other questions? Any other comments? We have a motion before us.
But would you like one?
Oh, I thought we had one.
No, we had discussion before we took a
motion. Oh, I apologize. I thought you put it on the...
you didn't give me a chance, Senator. You just went to discussion right away.
Oh, it's almost 9 o'clock, I guess. Okay. The chair would take a motion on Senate Bill 65.
Ms. Chair, I move Senate Bill 65 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll support this as a courtesy, but I may change my mind when it comes to the floor.
All right. Any other comments? Any objections at this time? Not seeing any, so ordered. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 65 and open the work session. Chair will carry 65. The opens the work session on Senate Bill 68.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 68 was also heard on February the 3rd, an update to statutory language to conform to current Department of State Police structure and practice declares emergency effective on passage. The provisions of the measure were discussed. It's a result of review of Oregon Revised Statutes Chapter 181 by the Department of State Police. Has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no subsequent recall.
The Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 68 to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Any discussions? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Cruz, would you like to carry this since this was Superintendent Brown's testimony?
Yes.
And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 68 and open a work session on Senate Bill 400.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 400 was heard on February the 10th. And it's the one that is a codification of the institutional mailbox rule, which was previously in effect by rule. It creates that additional method to determine the date of notice that an appeal is filed, if it's filed by an inmate, so that they can drop it off with the person or at the part of the facility that's been designated for that purpose.
All right. Thank you. Is there any, let's see,
Mr. Chair, take
a motion.
I move Senate Bill 400 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 400 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, if I could interrupt, I apologize. I failed to state for the record there's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal and no subsequent recall.
All right. Thank you for the clarification. We have a motion to move Senate Bill 400 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Wissett, would you take this one?
Sure.
Thank you. And that takes care of what we have before us. Council, is there anything else we need to cover today?
No, sir. Mr. Chair.
All right. So we're going to conclude our work for today. I know that Monday is President's Day, but I believe we, the legislature, will be here. So we will start, I believe our start time is 8:30. So with that, thank you for being here, and we're adjourned.